All right, good morning. Good morning. So I don't know about you, but I am feeling a little bit weapon fatigued. And what I mean by that is we are in the ninth lesson of this story that we began. At the very beginning, you see these objects here. They're up here kind of telling the story that we've already gone through. We started at the very beginning of where the Bible begins, and that is with the creation of the world and the creation of mankind, sin entering into the world. Then we saw God create his nation out of the couple Abraham and Sarah. We learned about Joseph and how he took his family into Egypt. The nation of Israel grows in Egypt. We find them years later enslaved there, and with a mighty hand, God takes them out of Egypt with the help of Moses, and then he gives Moses his instructions for how he wants his people to live. He tries to take them into the promised land, but because of the Israelites' disobedience, instead they have to wander in the desert for 40 years. And then finally with Joshua, he takes them into the promised land. They conquer Jericho. And then last week, Chris talked about the judges and how they tried to lead the Israelites through a time of rebellion. It says that people were living however they saw fit to live. And so through this time, we've seen plagues, we've seen battles, we've seen curses, and we've seen genocide, we've seen people being impaled with spears, we've seen lots of swords, and even a tent peg and a hammer. And it's been a little graphic for this girl, I have to admit. I mean, I've watched my fair share of war movies. I've watched A Band of Brothers about the World War II. I've watched it twice. So I can hang with some violence, but right now I'm feeling like I need a little bit of a break. I don't know about you, but it makes me think of when my daughters were younger. I have three daughters. Now I have two of them are teenagers. But when they were much younger, we lived in Ohio, and we had this dear family that we were really good friends with, and they had three boys the same age as my girls. And so we would get together, and it would always happen that the girls and the boys, they would just kind of disappear. They'd either go and play in the basement or in the backyard, and then the adults would talk. Yay, we got to talk. So then the girls would kind of come upstairs and just look like something was wrong, and you'd ask them what was wrong, and they'd say something like, "I just can't play lightsabers anymore." The boys were really into Star Wars at this time, and what playing lightsabers meant was that they would take those foam pool noodles that you can buy and basically just beat up on each other for, like, they could do it for hours, but my girls could only hang so long with that before they were like, "I need a break." And so that's kind of how I'm feeling today, and the good news is the story today contains no weapons. So that's good news. I'm also excited because this story has a lot for all of us to kind of see ourselves in this story. And I hope that you will really try to see yourself in the story today. There are a couple of characters in this story who we find in a really desperate, scary situation, very sad. And they didn't get themselves in this situation. It was the decision of other people, the injustice in the world, and just some crazy circumstances that placed them there. And my guess is some of you can relate to that. Maybe it was decisions that a spouse made or your parents made or maybe even a boss that causes your life to be hard today. Or perhaps it's just the injustice in the world. It could be just where you were born or poverty or maybe just even the color of your skin affects how hard life is for you. Or perhaps it's just something crazy that's happened. It could be an illness that's unexplained, and you suffer every day because of it, or perhaps a loss of somebody close to you that you feel like life is just hard right now for you. If you can relate to any of that, then you're going to see yourself in the story today. But what about those of us who are feeling like life is pretty good right now? I feel that way. I'm lucky to say I love my job. We have enough money to pay the bills, and going to the doctor is kind of just for checkups. What does the story have to offer for us today? Well, I think it's important that all of us see that God wants to use us no matter what our circumstances. He wants us to ask this question, what will my legacy be? Will it be about my circumstances, or will it be about how I handle what life throws at me? So we're going to start today looking at the book of Ruth, very first chapter, verse 1. It says, in the days when the judges ruled, that's when what we talked about last week when Chris talked about the judges, there was a famine in the land. And so a man from Bethlehem in Judah, together with his wife and two sons, went to live for a while in the country of Moab. Now we learn right away why this story is so important. That little town in Bethlehem. It's the very same oh little town in Bethlehem that we sing about at Christmas time and that we learn about in the New Testament. So we know that something important is going to happen here because it's Bethlehem. It's a small little town just south of Jerusalem with maybe 200 people living in it. But something important is going to happen here. And there's a family. We meet them. The father is Elimelech. Try that. Elimelech. And then the wife's Naomi. They have two sons, Kilian and Malian. And they move to the foreign land of Moab. Now, we've been to Moab before. If you remember when the Israelites are wandering, they were in Moab. And God got pretty angry with the Israelite men because they were marrying the women from Moab. And what they were doing, instead of kind of introducing these women to the one true God, instead they were worshiping the idols of the women that they were marrying. And God got very upset at this. And that is exactly where they go. They go to Moab, and the sons, they marry daughters from Moab. And their names are Orpah and Ruth. And right away, we kind of see that Naomi is in a very sad situation. I don't think any of us can kind of imagine what the pain she was going through. She has lost her husband, and now she's lost both of her sons. They both have died. So she's in a foreign land, and she's without any male relatives to take care of her. She has no way to take care of herself, a woman in these days. She's older. So all she has to do to trust in life, the only people she can trust are her daughter-in-laws, the foreign women, and she decides she's going to go back to Israel, her homeland. She's going to travel by herself, but they decide to go with her. Her daughter-in-laws go with her, and on their way as they're traveling, Naomi kind of thinks about it a while, and she has a conversation with her daughter-in-laws, and she says, go back, each of you, to your mother's home, and may the Lord show you kindness as you have shown kindness to your dead husband and to me. And may the Lord grant that each of you will find rest in the homes of another husband. You see, she realizes kind of the sacrifice she's asking them to make. She realizes that they have parents that they could live and be taken care of. So for them to go with her to Israel, they're basically rejecting their family, leaving them, cutting all ties, cutting ties to friends, cutting ties to their culture, everything they've ever known. It's a completely different culture that they're going to be going into. And she also realizes it's a totally different religion. So basically, they have to reject their old religion if they're going to choose to come and follow her and accept her religion as well. And she knows it will be very hard for them to remarry because we know that they are instructed not to marry foreign women because of the that they would be a complication for them to still worship and obey God. And so that's what she offers to her daughter-in-laws. And Orpah considers it, and she chooses to go back to what she's known. And then as she's leaving, Naomi says to Ruth, look, your sister-in-law is going back to her people and her gods. Go back with her. And Ruth says this classic line that we kind of all know Ruth for. She says, please don't urge me to leave you or turn my back from you. Where you go, I will go, and where you stay, I will stay. Your people will be my people, and your God, my God. Where you die, I will die, and there I will be buried. So she's making it very clear, I know exactly the sacrifice I'm making. I know that I am giving up my family, I'm giving up my people, my culture, my gods that I worshipped, and instead I'm with you. Your people are now my people, and I am going to worship your God. It says a lot about Ruth's character. I mean, Imagine the sacrifice. Such kindness it would take, such loyalty it would take to just leave everything behind just to take care of this woman. But I think we also learn something about Naomi's character here. There had to be something incredible about this woman that would cause Ruth to make this choice. I mean, I just think she had to be an incredible example of kindness and love to her daughter-in-laws and her whole family. I imagine that they saw something different in Naomi and her relationship with her God, her trust in him, that would make Ruth kind of trust that things would be okay, that she could go and take Naomi to her land. And so I just want to encourage us today that I think that's true of us as well. I think that God can use our character to lead other people to know and follow God. Jesus said to his disciples that he wanted them to let their light shine before other people so they might see our good deeds and glorify our Father in heaven. So letting our light shine is all about how we live, how we treat one another, and that letting our light shine and how we live is supposed to make people see God in us and that they will glorify God because of that. That's a great encouragement for us today. It's challenging for us, but I imagine in a group this size that some of you have stories of people who did that for you, and that is what Naomi and Ruth's relationship was like. So they get to Bethlehem, and the women of Bethlehem come out and see Naomi, and they say, "Is this Naomi?" And we don't really know why. Maybe she changed the way she looked, or the fact that she's coming back kind of by herself without her family, just with this foreign daughter-in-law. And her reply is very, very sad. We kind of see where she is emotionally with her reply. She says, "Don't call me Naomi, call me Mara, because the Almighty has made my life very bitter." You see, her name Naomi means pleasant, and she doesn't feel very pleasant. She doesn't feel like life is very pleasant right now. Instead, she wants to be called Mara, which means bitter. And that's what she feels like her life is. That's all she has left, is a bitter, sad life. She's thinking about her loss and her pain. And I feel really bad for her in this spot because you see that she kind of not only is separated from her family, but she's also feeling separated from her God. She feels like God is punishing her, which would have been very common back then. Anytime something bad happened, a lot of times the Israelites would assume that something that person did, some sin, that God was punishing them for. And so I'm guessing that Naomi was feeling guilty, that maybe even people were talking about her and blaming her for what has happened to her family. It's sad because when you reread the scripture, sometimes God does do that. He does punish people. But a lot of times, things happen, bad things happen, and it has absolutely nothing to do with sin. It's just what's happening in life. And so I feel really bad for Naomi at this spot because she's just in a desperate situation and is feeling disconnected with God. She says, "I went away full, but the Lord has brought me back empty. So I left with a family, and I'm coming back with nothing." She's asking that question, what is my legacy going to be? Is this all I'm going to be known for, just this sad circumstances, all my loss? So they get to Bethlehem during barley harvesting season. Now, I'm going to let you know, I don't really know a lot about farming or harvesting. I grew up a very short time in kind of a farming community, but I never harvested. I've never done any of that. And I'm guessing for us city folks, there are a lot of us that have no idea when barley harvesting season is or all these terms that are kind of used in this section. So Ruth has this idea that she's going to go into the fields and she's going to glean. Now, gleaning is, is picking up kind of the leftovers. After the workers in the fields are picking up the harvest, certainly things will get dropped. And she's going to go and try to pick up the leftovers just to kind of sustain them. Now, this is something that would have happened often, that God kind of knew that there would always be people that needed extra help, the poor or the foreigners. And he gave them, the Israelites, instructions. He said in Leviticus 19, 9 and 10, he says, "When you reap the harvest of your land, do not reap to the very edges of your field or gather the gleanings of your harvest. Do not go over your vineyards a second time or pick up the grapes that have fallen. Leave them for the poor and the foreigner." So we see here that God really always has the poor in mind, those people that are helpless. He's always thinking ahead of how they can be provided for, and he commands his people to think about them. And so that is what Ruth is going to do. She's counting on that provision for her. So she goes into the field. And so chapter 2, verse 3, it says, "As it turned out, she was working in a field belonging to Boaz, who was the clan of Elimelech." So she just ends up in a field with this man who happens to be, he owns a lot of land. He also just happens to be from the family of her husband, a close relative of her husband. Now, this phrase, "as it turns out" or "as it happened," shows up a lot in the Bible. Some people call it coincidence. Some people call it God's providence. In the Bible, it says, "as it turned out." Well, we saw it in Joseph, the story of Joseph. As it turned out, he's put in the same jail as the cupbearer and the baker. And as it turned out, they have a dream that he can interpret. Then they leave, and then Pharaoh has a dream. And as it turns out, they remember Joseph, and he can interpret it. And as it turns out, what he interprets, Pharaoh says, "Hey, I'll put you in charge of that." And we remember how that story goes. But I see that happening a lot in my life as well. I don't know about you, but if I look, I see a lot of "as it turned out" things happening. So I wanted to share just a few things that relate to this church and how this church started. So, as it turned out, Chris and Lindsay Travis were part of a church in Cincinnati that Larry and I, my husband and I, started going to. And we became really close friends. And then, as it turns out, Chris and Lindsay felt a calling to move to New York City for a job. Chris was in the Teaching Fellows program, and they needed an apartment. So they wanted to find an apartment somewhere in Manhattan. They looked at different options, made a list of what they wanted in an apartment, made a list of the different places they were going to see. Chris was sent on to find an apartment, and as it turned out, the very first apartment he looked at was on Arden in Inwood, and that apartment had everything they needed. And so he just didn't look at anything else. They got the apartment in Inwood. And as it turns out, he gets a job in Harlem. Some of you might know, have heard the stories of how that went. But he also interviewed for some other jobs, and he had an interview, as it turns out, in the neighborhood, a school called City College Academy of the Arts. And he really wanted that job. And as it turned out, at that time, Larry and I came with some friends to visit Chris and Lindsay, and we were just visiting, encouraging him, and he was telling us about the school. So we all went in front of the school, stood in front of it, and prayed. We prayed for the principal. We prayed for the teachers. I didn't know one of those teachers, but I prayed for them, prayed for the students there. Now, over a year later, Chris and Lindsay were feeling the calling to move to start a church here in the city. And so they asked Larry and I if we would consider moving to help them with that church. And we really did feel like God was calling us to do that, so we decided to do that. But the problem was we needed to find schools for our daughter. And so that is tough. If you've ever experienced that or heard that, it's hard to find a school. Our oldest daughter was going into middle school, which is extremely hard to get her into a good school. And so we were having a hard time. But as it turned out, Chris had the phone number of the principal at City College Academy of the Arts. He called her in the middle of the school day. She picks up and tells us to come on over and meets with Larry and I. We love the school. And she says, as it turns out, I can have Emma come to this school. It's going to take a little fighting on my part, but I'm willing to do it. So that's where she went to school. It's where our middle daughter is going to school now. We have some people here today that are going there as well. We also needed another school for our two younger daughters. And so we found the school named Muscoda New School, where we looked to send our kids there. They were excited about having our kids be a part of the school, but they needed our middle daughter, Lily, to spend one day. She was in third grade. They wanted her to spend one day in the school just to see if she fit. And Lily was really nervous about it. But as it turned out, they had an older girl, a fifth grader, show her around that day. And that girl just happens to be Demilette Fernandez, who, as it turns out, is here today. And as it turns out, all of you are here today at Muscoda New School. Pretty cool stuff. So Boaz is in the fields and notices Ruth working. And so he says to the foreman, who's this girl? And the foreman kind of says, oh, haven't you heard? Naomi came back from Moab, and she came back with a foreign daughter-in-law. And that's Ruth right there. And she's been working hard. She's been working from morning till night trying to provide for them. And so Boaz decides he's going to go and have a conversation with Ruth, and he tells Ruth, please, work in my fields for the rest of the harvest season because I'm going to make sure that you are safe. I'm going to make sure none of the guys bother you. If you get thirsty, just ask my workers for water, and they'll give you water. We'll take care of you. This is the place to be. And I think it's interesting that Ruth's reaction to that. She says, why have I found such favor in your eyes that you noticed me, a foreigner? Certainly, she's probably gotten some mistreatment, maybe a cold shoulder because she's foreign, maybe even rude things were said to her. But Boaz is a little bit different. As it turns out, his mother was a foreigner. If you've been reading along, you've heard about her. When we talked about the 12 spies that go to Canaan to spy on the land, they had to be hidden by a woman named Rahab. And she makes a deal with them that she will hide them as long as when they come back and take over the city, that they will save her and her family. And so we know that they must have made good on their deal, and she must have married a man in Israel because her son is Boaz. So as it turns out, he's not freaked out by the foreign thing. And so he has a conversation with her. And I think it's also interesting what he says he noticed about her. He says, I've been told all about what you've done for your mother-in-law since the death of your husband and how you left your father and your mother and your homeland and came to live with a people you did not know before. May the Lord repay you for what you have done. So basically, she's asking, why did you notice me? And he's saying, I noticed your character. I noticed your kindness. That's what I noticed about you. And I think for all of us, whether you're single or married, you remember a time where you kind of dreamed about being noticed by somebody, that somebody would fall in love with you and notice you. The problem is, I think most of us were kind of told how to get noticed. And it had a lot to do with how we look on the outside, right? Maybe if you're skinnier, maybe if you're curvier, maybe if you dress more sexy, then you'll get noticed. You know, guys get told, maybe if you dress better, maybe if you're muscular, right? Then you get noticed. And the truth is, you get noticed for those things. It's true. But who do you get noticed by? What's the character of the person who is going to notice you? And so Boaz is noticing something different. And I think it's something that we all really want to be noticed for, right? If we're honest, we can all kind of admit that what we really want somebody to notice about us is who we are on the inside, right? Our character. And so if you're single today, I want to just encourage you, if you're going to spend any energy on getting noticed, why don't you spend that energy on your character? And why don't you spend it on being more like Jesus? And the way you can do that is your relationship with Jesus. That's my encouragement for you today. And Boaz says something also really significant at the end of this passage. He says, may you be richly rewarded by the Lord, the God of Israel, under whose wings you have come to take refuge. So that word wings is a Hebrew word that means protection. And I just really love the imagery of that word. I mean, I can just kind of imagine a big, huge wing kind of wrapping itself around me and protecting me. And Boaz is saying, you are a sister. You are under God's care, and I recognize that God is, he's the one protecting you. It isn't me. It's God who's protecting you. And I think that's also some good advice, that you want to look for a guy or a girl who recognizes that you are under God's care. And so Boaz, he and Ruth, they kind of have time together. They share a meal together and they're talking. And then Ruth goes home and she tells Naomi, who she just happened to meet. And Naomi knows exactly who she's talking about. She knows that Boaz is a close relationship and knows that he can fulfill this unique role. It's called a guardian redeemer. And that is a unique kind of role in for the Israelite people. It's a close relationship, and he can do a few things. If, like, a close relationship was murdered, he can go and avenge that death. That isn't true today, but back then it was. He could also buy back land that a relative has sold, and he can buy it back in his relative's name. He can also marry a widow of a relative, and basically he can provide an heir for that close relative. It's a very unique role that only a few people would be able to provide, and she knows that Boaz can. And so Ruth goes back. She works the entire harvesting season, which would have been a while. You know, like I said, I don't know a lot about harvesting, but from what I know, it's at least a month, probably even 2 months, that she's there every day, kind of being noticed by Boaz and her noticing Boaz. And so one day, Naomi has a conversation with her daughter-in-law, and she says, "My daughter, I must find a home for you where you will be well provided for." Now, she's not just talking about a house. She's talking about a husband. And she has a good idea of who that husband might be. She suggests Boaz makes the perfect husband for her. She gives her an idea of how she can let Boaz know that she's interested in marrying her. This is a unique kind of suggestion. This is advice that I will never give. It's not advice that my mother-in-law would have ever given, but her advice is that she should get all cleaned up, pretty, and smell good, and go to the threshing floor. Now, the threshing floor is where they separate the harvest. They're getting the good grain from what they don't need. And I think it's just a big rock that they would be working on. So Boaz is overseeing this. He's hanging out there. And Naomi says, wait until he's ate his dinner, he's drank, he's calm, and he goes to bed. And then basically she tells her to stalk him. And kind of hide out, wait till he goes to sleep, and go and uncover his feet, which is weird. But back then, evidently that meant something different. It meant, I want to marry you. I still don't quite understand that. I think, why don't we just use words? It seems weird. But Ruth wasn't too taken back by it, because she goes ahead and does it. She does exactly what she's told to do. She goes and uncovers his feet, and it says that she sleeps there, which I don't think she slept, because she smells good, but I'm guessing Boaz's feet didn't have perfume on them. So I think that wasn't a lot of sleep for her, but Boaz is asleep. He wakes up, and he kind of sees her and says, what's going on? And she wakes up and says, spread the corner of your garment over me, since you are a guardian redeemer of your family. That's weird. But back then it wasn't as weird, because that spread your garment, actually it's that same word garment, is the same Hebrew word for wing. So it meant, give me your protection, the protection that comes with being married. And that would have been a common phrase, spread your garment over me. It was kind of the symbol for saying you were going to get married. And so she's asking very clearly, I want you to marry me, and I want you to be our guardian redeemer. And he sees this as kindness. He says to her, this kindness is greater than you showed earlier. So all the kindness I've seen you do, this is even greater, that you would choose me. I'm an older man. You could have picked somebody younger, but you chose me. And he knows that there's a closer relative. And so he tells Ruth that he must talk to the closer relative first. But if that relative doesn't want to marry her, then yes, he will definitely marry her. And he encourages her to spend the night there. Now, I think all of us kind of raise our eyebrows and go, uh-huh, yeah, okay, I know what's happening here. And some people, you know, there's debate about what happened here, but there's a couple things I want us to remember. The first one is they aren't married, and Boaz isn't sure he's going to marry her. So if he does sleep with her, in some ways, he's taking advantage of the situation. And so, you know, we would kind of question his character a little bit. But then the bigger issue for me is that the Bible isn't PG-rated. I don't know if you've ever read Genesis before, but it's got graphic sexual content in it. And the writers of the Old Testament, they don't really care if we're going to be shocked by something. They just kind of say how it is. And that isn't in this passage at all. There's nothing said, which just kind of makes me think nothing happened, which is shocking for us. But in any case, the next morning, Boaz gets up and he goes to the relative, the close relative, and he kind of says, oh, this land, would you like to take this land of Elimelech's and buy it back? And the close relative is like, yeah, I'm interested in that land. That sounds great. And then I think Boaz said something like, oh, yeah, but you have to marry the foreign woman, you know, the woman from Moab. And then if you have a kid, he's going to inherit the land. And then the relative was like, on second thought, no thanks. I don't think that's a great idea. And so Boaz gets, I think, what he wanted, and he marries Ruth. And the end of the story is, you know, they live happily ever after. It's a wonderful story. I think it ends really showing the contrast, though. At the beginning of the story, we start with Naomi, and we see Naomi's pain and where she is and her questioning, what is my legacy? And at the very end of the story, it ends with the women in Bethlehem saying, Naomi has a son, because Boaz and Ruth have this child together who is actually now considered her descendant. And as it happens, their son Obed has a child named Jesse, who as it happens has a child named David, who becomes the King David we'll learn about in the future. And the New Testament says of King David that he was a man after God's own heart. And then, descendants later, would return to Bethlehem, and there would be born the Savior of the world, Jesus. Now that's quite a legacy. It's a great story, and I hope that all of you can kind of see yourself in that story. I know for me, I have a hard time kind of relating to Ruth and Naomi. I've never had to worry about the next meal. I've never had to live without the support of a large family around me. But I have that mostly due to my mom and my mom's character and the decisions she's made in life. You see, my mom's childhood was very different than mine. She was born in the 1950s, and very early on, things didn't go well. Her mother left. Her mom left her and her older brother and her father. She basically had no contact with her again when she was about two, and she left to live with another man. And so my mom was raised by her father, who was a kind man who really tried his best, but you can just imagine, it was tough. She didn't really have a childhood. She had to cook and clean and take care of everything, and things should have gotten better for her when he remarried, but it didn't, because her stepmother was a hard woman. She was cruel to my mother. I remember as a young kid kind of hearing stories and going, huh, that's emotional abuse. And yeah, my mom was emotionally abused, definitely, as a child. It was hard. And then when my mom was 16, my grandfather died of lung cancer. So she's left with this step family who made it very clear she didn't belong, that she earned her keep, very much like Cinderella. And it was a hard, hard childhood for her. But I'm thankful to say that my grandfather, as it happened, was raised in church. And so he took my mother and her brother to church as a young, when they were very young, every Sunday. And my mom really connected to God's love for her. And I think it gave her hope that life would someday be better for her. Then later, my grandfather, actually, when he remarried, he felt like he was a divorced man who remarried back then. He wasn't welcome in the church, but he still dropped his kids off every Sunday. They went into church, and my mom talks about the people who just kind of adopted her and cared about her. She talks about her. There's a Sunday school teacher that she doesn't remember what her name was because she just called her grandma, and she didn't have a grandma. And so that woman really cared for her. And then I remember always hearing about the family that just kind of took her in. She always sat with them. They came and picked her up when my grandfather passed away. They made sure that she got there every Sunday. And so my mom really saw there's a difference, a different life that I can have. There's a different way to live. Following God can make a difference in a family someday for me. And so, as it turned out, a man, a young Christian man, noticed her kindness, noticed her smile, and married her. And as it turned out, they had 3 kids. They taught them to love the Lord and to serve them. They weren't perfect. Their kids weren't perfect. But as it turned out, we all married somebody who also loved the Lord and served together. As it turns out, we have 7 granddaughters. We're trying our best to raise them to love the Lord. And I really believe that our lives are different because of the choices my mom made. We are a part of her legacy. But we're also a part of the legacy of those people who don't even know me. Those people in the church who just saw my mom and saw she was in need. And we are a part of their legacy as well. So how about you today? What will your legacy be? Will there be people who mention your name when they talk about how they learned about God and his love for them, when they talk about their decision to follow Jesus? Will people say things like, as it turned out, I had a neighbor, or as it turned out, there was this girl in my class at school. As it turned out, I had a mom or a dad who was a great example to me of obedience to God. Or maybe, as it turned out, I had this older couple in my life that they prayed for me all the time. As it turned out. So I ask you all today, what will your legacy be? Let's pray.